From the Sky News Centre at 5, David Cameron's met with Sri Lanka's president during his trip to the Commonwealth Summit and asked him about claims of human rights abuses. Earlier, the Prime Minister was mobbed by protesters whose relatives went missing during the country's 26-year civil war. Steve Crawshaw from Amnesty International, who's outside the summit in Colombo, says the issue needs to be raised.
We have a situation that in the last phase of the war in 2009, tens of thousands of civilians died in a very brief period, with very serious allegations that the government has to answer, which they're refusing to do.
The airline Flybe's confirmed six of its regional bases are closing and it's cutting around 500 jobs. Most of the staff will go from its sites in Belfast, Birmingham, Edinburgh, Exeter and the Isle of Man. HMS Daring's arrived in the Philippines and has been sending out a helicopter to survey remote islands for damage. The Disasters Emergency Committee says their appeal has now raised £30 million in 3 days. Spain hasn't broken any rules by increasing checks at the border crossing with Gibraltar, according to an investigation by the European Commission. It follows a summer of increased tension between the two sides over the creation of an artificial reef in disputed waters. Animal rights groups have criticised Princess Anne's suggestion that welfare standards for horses would improve if we ate them. The Princess Royal told a conference that owners might take better care of their animals if they could sell them for meat. But is there a market for horse meat? These shoppers in London's Borough Market were offered a sample to taste.
Not bad. Very tasty. Mm.
Yeah?
Like overdone steak.
Just like a cow. Yeah, what's the difference?
I think I would rather ride than eat it.
And it just tastes like a really nice steak.
Simon Cowell's been criticised by the Education Secretary for suggesting young people can become successful by being lucky rather than working hard at school. Michael Gove says the music mogul's remarks are irresponsible. Simon Cowell's spokesman says the star was making a joke. That's the latest. I'm Kevin Gover.
BCFM.
Love Bristol.
Love.
BCFM. 93.2.
A Bristol kind of love.
It's Friday, 5 o'clock, and BCFM's politics show, Friday Drive Time. I'm a slightly coldy Tony Gosling. Helping us review this week's news is independent former Labour councillor for Hartcliffe, Derek Pickup, and also former Trade Union Socialist Coalition candidate for Bristol Mayor, Tom Baldwin. After the 6 o'clock news, Prime Minister David Cameron and King-in-waiting Prince Charles are sitting down to dinner tonight in a former British colony with one of the world's worst war criminals. Sri Lankan President Rajapaksa and his evil army chief brother are running a genocidal police state. India and Canada have boycotted the talks, so why is Britain there? Plus, the strange death of GCHQ cryptographer seconded to MI6 Gareth Williams. How can the Met Police say there was no foul play? That's all in the second hour after 6 o'clock. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 2 Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs of 10, generally cloudy weekend with some sunny spells. Next week, highs of 7 Celsius, a fairly sunny week, but feeling cold, especially midweek, and frost overnight. Next weekend, that's the 23rd and 24th of November, highs of 2 Celsius, fairly sunny with frosty nights, so getting quite cold. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review this week's news, firstly, is independent and former Labour councillor for Hartcliffe, Derek Pickup. Hi, Derek, and welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you, Tony.
First of all, the obvious question, how come you're now an independent and not a Labour councillor, Derek?
Well, I think when your arguments with certain members of the Labour Party start taking precedent over helping your constituents, it's the time to leave. So that's what I did. I left, and now I have the time to actually focus on my constituents and providing them with the service that they deserve.
Yeah, but, you know, you're a broad church, the Labour Party. You're bound to disagree with some people.
Yes, but I think the problem is sometimes you get certain people within a political party who decide that they want to have a bit of a clean sweep. And for a couple of years now, there have been a number of people who've started to talk about what they would describe as the old guard, and I think they would list me in that particular group.
Well, you're the sort of elders, I suppose, of the local party, people who've been around for longer than some of the youngsters. Surely you're actually maybe even more valuable than people who've only been in the party for a short period of time.
Well, I would agree with that, and I think the Labour Party is a broad church, and I've got nothing against the Labour Party as such. And I think you have all sorts of people in the Labour Party. And I think the whole thing about a political party is you should be working together for the benefit of your constituents and working together for your joint political ideology. And at the moment, given the problems that lots of people have because of the economic situation, because of a right-wing Conservative government, you would have anticipated that somebody like the Labour Party would have actually pulled together to fight the government and to help their constituents rather than fighting each other.
Now, am I right in thinking that it's actually the reason for this is because the local party has decided that they don't want you to stand in Hartcliffe at the next local elections?
No, I don't think the local party have any problem in me standing. I don't think any of the people in South Bristol would have any problem in terms of me standing. I think there's a very small group within the Labour Party who decided that my face didn't fit.
Is this the national or regional party or what? So if it's not the local party, who's doing this?
No, this is people within the wider Labour Party within, if you like, Bristol, but certainly not from Bristol South, which is, you know, the area that I represent. I have no problems there at all. I have no problems with the Labour group on Bristol City Council. And in my remaining time as a councillor between now and next May, I will be supporting the Labour group and I'll be supporting Labour policies.
So, I mean, are the Labour, let's try and get this clear, Derek. Are the Labour Party actually supporting you as a candidate in the next local elections when you come up for re-election?
Well, at the moment, I'm not intending to stand, and the Labour Party
have decided
not to endorse me as a candidate.
Ah, right, okay. And which happened first, though? Did they decide not to endorse you, or did you decide not to stand?
Well, they decided not to endorse me, but that's only a panel of three people. And if I'd wanted I could have appealed and fought that decision. But that came after, you know, a long period of a small group of people, if you like, targeting me as an individual, and I just got fed up.
Well, it sounds to me like it could be a case of bullying. What sort of reasons were given for you not being able to stand? Were there any credibility to them?
Well, I think all sorts of evidence was fabricated against me, and there was no credibility at all. And if I'd wanted to actually appeal and fight it and become the candidate, I could have done. But it was just getting very weary, and my view was that, you know, it was time to step down, step back, and do something more positive.
Surely the thing to do for the party's sake is, if you think that there's allegations being made against you that are untrue, surely it's a fairly simple matter for you to be to sit down, you know, with a pen and paper, write a sheet of A4 paper saying this is not untrue because of this and this and this, and then it could all be over with.
That's a very simple thing to do, but if you're actually trying to make a point and you want the party to change and stop certain things happening, you might think, well, how can I create a change in attitude? And I don't think anybody expected me to resign. I think they expected me to do what you said, sit down with pen and paper, provide the evidence to show that I had been a good and hard-working Labour councillor and following Labour policies. However, I felt I could have more of an impact by resigning.
Oh, interesting. How does the Labour Party actually go through candidates and endorse them? Because obviously there must be some sort of process over several years of someone being a councillor. They're looked at. I mean, say, for example, I mean, we've had in the Conservative group, we've had Richard Eddy, who I know has been very ill, doesn't reply to emails, certainly that I send him, that sort of thing. And for a long time, I know he wasn't actually attending meetings at council, yet he was still a councillor. That would seem to me quite obvious, even though it's rather a pity that he's ill, that he, you know, it's very difficult for him to represent people as a councillor, and therefore it's not such a good idea. But what about the Labour Party? How do they deal with actually making sure and endorsing candidates and saying, well, this person's going to be good for the next election? Of course, that's just for councillors, but it's a much bigger stakes when it comes to MPs.
Yeah, I mean, the Labour Party look very closely at people who put their names forward to be councillors. And a few years ago, we had a thing called the Labour Academy, where potential candidates would actually do a year-long training process so that they learnt about what it meant to be a councillor and what the expectations might be. You do have a process where you're a sitting councillor where the chief whip of the Labour group actually writes a report on you to say, you know, have you been doing your job? Have you been representing your constituents? Have you been going to your committees? Have you been supporting the Labour Party? Have you been a good councillor? And my report was faultless.
So some other allegations have come in against you. How is this done, though? I mean, you know, one likes to think, I mean, many of our political parties nowadays seem less and less and less actually democratic themselves. Is this done in a democratic way? I mean, for example, there's a panel that scrutinises you and makes a decision about whether you're a suitable person. Are they elected? And if so, who by?
Well, I think like in all parties, we have the Bristol Labour Party is, if you like, responsible for the selection of candidates locally. And they set up a system where there are panels that interview candidates and make a decision whether somebody's
suitable. But how does someone
suitable.
Get on that panel? How does someone get on that panel?
They there's a decision made by the executive of the Bristol Labour Party about who should sit on that panel.
So it's a sort
and
of invite.
It ought to be a very clear and transparent process. I think often in political parties, whichever political party is at the moment, those processes are not as transparent as they might be. And I think that's one reason why some people have started to get a bit fed up about political parties, because they're not always as transparent as they should be. And I think, you know, politics should be a transparent process.
I mean, haven't you let your voters down? They voted for you as a Labour candidate, and you've decided, in a way, it sounds like a little bit like, you know, maybe possibly said to be sour grapes. You've decided, no, I don't like this decision, I'm leaving. You're no longer representing them as a Labour Party person. They put a cross in the box next to the Labour Party.
No, I don't, because I certainly spoke to the Labour group and the Labour councillors, and they were quite happy for me to remain a councillor between now and May. And what is quite unusual, they've allowed me to remain as a member on the various committees that I'm on. I've committed myself to vote with the Labour group. I have no problems with the Labour group. And I will still support my constituents between now and May. So my constituents are not losing out at all.
Interesting. Right, we're also joined by Tom Baldwin. It's the Trade Union and Socialist Coalition, I believe you represent. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Tell us a bit about them.
Well, it's a coalition that involves the Rail Union, the RMT, involves a number of socialist groups, such as the Socialist Party, of which I'm a member, and other trade unionists and activists in an individual capacity that support that, and basically has been set up in order to provide an alternative to all the main parties, because I think that the process that Derek's talked about is quite a long process that's happened in the Labour Party of cleansing it to become the party it now is, a pro-big business, anti-working class party. And, you know, I think, you know, Derek's not alone. There's many, many people who feel that they've been pushed out, or who feel they can no longer support a party that, you know, brought us the Iraq War, brought us years of privatisation, is offering no real opposition to the austerity programme at the moment, only a lighter version of the same. But I think the question for people who feel abandoned by the Labour Party is, well, what's the alternative? What do we do and put in its place, and on what politics should that be based? And Derek said a couple of times he has no problem with the Labour group. Well, I do have a problem with the way that the Labour group has behaved on Bristol City Council, because last year we had a cuts budget of about £30 million of cuts, and the Labour group abstained on that. They didn't even oppose it, except for one councillor. There was only one single councillor in the whole of the council chamber who voted against that. And I think this year, with £90 million of cuts coming up, that poses that question much more sharply. When it comes to austerity, when it comes to attacks on ordinary working people, Are you going to stand up and fight that, or are you going to sit down and go along with it? And I think an abstention is not opposition.
Hang on a second, Tom. Okay. Can you just answer that directly, Derek, and explain why the Labour Party doesn't? I mean, we've had similar things, for example, with the benefit cap at Westminster. The Labour Party, even though one would have thought naturally that they would be opposing it, voting against it, they abstained. Why is the Labour Party doing these sorts of things?
Well, I think it's about, you know, I think after the Labour Party conference this year, they actually have started to come out with some policies which have started to create some water between themselves and the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats. And I think Labour has to be far clearer about what exactly they do support and they don't support. And I think Tom's right. In terms of something like the budget, we should be voting against the cuts, but we should be making very clear where those cuts come from.
So
it's
why didn't the
elected mayor. It's not the elected mayor who's making the cuts. The cuts are very firmly coming from Westminster.
So why did the Labour group abstain then on the budget?
I don't know. That was their decision. More people wanted to abstain than to vote against it.
Why would they?
If I was voting now, I would vote against those cuts. I can see no reason why, as a local authority, we would want to make £90 million worth of cuts. They're not savings. They're cuts to services that people need. You know, we've seen the sort of cuts coming through. We had the situation in the news about the Citizens Advice Bureau in Bath, where the Citizens Advice Bureau are dealing with more people than they've ever had to deal with before. They deal with those people very effectively. The local authority in Bath looks at it and says, well, we'll cut the resources that go to them.
Well, it sounds like a bit like the situation at Accident and Emergency. Tom, what are your solutions to all this? Let's hear about some solutions. And the left is quite good at doing infighting when possibly they should be uniting against a Conservative government. What's your solution from your point of view, your political angle?
Well, I think uniting against a Conservative government is a very important part of that, but I think, you know, it has to be genuinely against what the Conservatives are doing rather than a poor imitation.
I mean, we have seen the Labour Party now come out against, for example, they said they reversed the bedroom tax.
Yeah, after a considerable degree of differing on what should have been a very clear-cut question for a party that's supposed to be the voice of ordinary working people. This was a cruel attack on some of the poorest and most vulnerable in society that saved very little money relatively. You know, it's really a case of cruelty rather than prudence or whatever. But they have opposed that. But in the last vote in Parliament, then they didn't bother to get all their MPs there. And they could have overturned that policy there and then had they managed to win that vote, which... Nope. Was within their grasp.
To be fair, the right is doing the same sort of thing with UKIP fighting away with the Conservatives these days as well. But let's leave the politicians and people coming from a political angle aside for a moment, because Marina Morris has been out on the streets this week to ask the people of Bristol, that's you, what you think of the left and the Labour Party.
Is the Labour Party credible opposition in Bristol and nationally?
Yes, I think it's a very credible opposition, and I think Ed Miliband has been doing very well in the last few months about fuel prices, press regulation and big issues. It's beginning to connect with people.
Not really. Like, Labour still has to make up for Tony Blair. They still have to make up for a lot of things. They did get us to this recession and we are still in this recession. I think it's going to be a Conservative win next time. I voted for the Liberal Democrats last time. I know it wasn't really their control, but student fees still went up. I'm a student. I'm really passionate about voting. I don't think I'm going to vote next time.
Nationally, at the moment, they're climbing back to potentially yes, but I'm not sure if they're viable for this election. That's for the next election that's coming up. I think it's still the troubles of the financial sort of situation that their party led the country into in their previous term in office there. I think that is still very fresh in a lot of people's minds. And I think the current government, even though it's controversial, but I think they're on the right track into to regain sort of the financial situation that's required. And I think the Labour Party needs a little bit longer to learn their lessons from that and to win over the voters again.
They're slightly better than the Tories, but only slightly. They basically keep to the same agenda as a rule. I'm hoping that they will get in next time and address the problems for people who are on benefits and who need help. They have to go back to how they used to be, back in the 70s.
No, I don't trust them.
Yes, for both. Yeah, there's quite a strong Labour support in Bristol. They're able to get Labour councillors. Nationally, they're a credible opposition, so I think they might make it into Parliament later.
Can you envisage Ed Miliband as a future Prime Minister?
I think he's relatively unknown. People don't know him. I think he's a little bit intellectual, perhaps, and a bit introverted. I think that can change, and I hope it will change as we get nearer to the election. The experience seems to be people who sit and listen to him are very impressed by him. He's not a flash-in-the-pan politician like Boris Johnson or perhaps Cameron. He's a different kind of person, but I think he's got great strengths.
No, he's got no charisma at all. I mean, his brother was really quite charismatic, and he didn't get in. I think his brother would have had a much better chance, but no, I wouldn't vote for Ed Miliband. I don't think a lot of people will, because he's just like a wet fish, really. Yeah.
Possibly, yes. Probably not this election, but possibly by the next election there, yes. He wouldn't have been my first choice. I'm not really a Labour supporter. But he does have some very interesting views, and yes, if he can survive this election without his party kicking him out.
It's a bit difficult because of how he's been lampooned in the media. A lot of people don't take him seriously as a leader. Cameron gets a better of him. He's a little bit wittier. Ed Miliband, he could grow as a leader, but I think at the moment he's not quite there. He doesn't strike me as a natural leader.
I think he's got a lot to say. He's good with people.
No, he just don't seem to do it. Nothing's going to affect me. Nothing will change my life.
Nah, I don't trust him either. He's a bit shifty. Okay, he's a bit fishy.
I can't know, personally. I just don't think he's got the charisma, or I think he has trouble communicating with the man in the street. Although he tries, I don't think he does.
Do you know who is the leader of the Labour Party in Bristol?
I think it's Helen Holland, Councillor Holland, at the moment. Although that has changed sometimes. I think the Labour Party locally is not doing so well as nationally and needs to get its act together. I think they need to be sharper, more focused on issues. And I think they've also made some mistakes recently. I disagree very much with the central library ideas of changing the library, part of the library, into a school. I think that's not acceptable on many, many levels, and it was foolish to back that. They should have been more principled and more clear about that.
Well, it may be a little bit unfair putting the questions to you, Derek, as you now an independent councillor, not a Labour councillor. But, you know, there's a couple of major points coming out there. A lot of people blaming the Labour Party for the recession and seeing the Conservatives as, at least on the figures, it may not feel good, but the figures, they seem to be doing quite well.
I think the Conservative Party have been very good at blaming Labour for the recession. I don't think it had anything to do with the Labour Party. I just think that's a Conservative Party myth.
Well, it's the bailout, wasn't it? I mean, billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions to bail out the banks. That's where a lot of our national debt we're dealing with now came from.
Yeah, well, it may have done, but it's not as if we were alone, and it's happened all over the world. And if you look at the American debt, the size of the American debt is so big, I'm not even sure I understand the figures. There's so many noughts there. And if you look at what's happening in a lot of European countries, if you look at Spain, you look at Italy, you look at Greece, they're certainly in a far worse position than we are. So I don't think, at the end of the day, if you take a broader approach to what the situation is, Britain's in that bad a position. And I think it's wrong to blame the Labour Party for what has been a worldwide recession. What we've got to look now is how do we move forward? One of the problems is that I think none of the political parties have been particularly clear about a way forward. I think we've got to look back. Everybody keeps saying there is no resources, we've got to shrink. However, there's an awful lot of people there who do need support. And if we look back to the end of the Second World War, when as a country we were definitely bankrupt, it still didn't stop us building God knows how many council houses. It didn't stop us setting up a welfare state. It didn't stop us setting up a national health service. If we could do that when we had no money, there's certainly an awful lot we could do now if we wanted to. You have to have the will. And I think it's about time that we actually went back to people like you were doing, talking to the people on the streets and say, what sort of country do you want to live in? What sort of society do we want? And then once we know what sort of society people want, the political parties need to say, how are we going to deliver that for people?
Well, I think actually, surely it's the other way around, that the political parties should be doing the thinking and make sure that they're appealing to the people rather than constantly going to ordinary people and saying, well, what do you want us to do? They should be setting out their stall and saying, we've got ideas, fresh ideas, and we're going to, you know, really just show leadership.
Well, I think it's a joint dialogue. And then from that joint dialogue, from those discussions, they come out and do show the leadership and drive the agenda.
Tom, what are your thoughts about the vox pops we heard there? All sorts of different views, particularly actually quite a lot of negative ones on Ed Miliband and his image. But yeah, probably the most worrying thing is that there were several people there who were saying that they wouldn't vote. They're not interested in voting. They don't see the point.
Yeah, or even that they thought that the Tories would win next time. I think, you know, again, the problems with the Labour Party are a large part of the background to that. You know, the Tories, it's true, have been successful in shifting the blame for the crisis onto welfare spending, etc. Absolute lies. That's not where it's come from. But the Labour haven't really done enough to challenge that. And, you know, nor have they done enough to challenge the whole idea of austerity. In fact, as I said, they've gone along with it. Really,
isn't it better shouldn't you really get into the Labour Party and fight to change it from within? Because what you're doing, by not being in the Labour Party, and I suppose I could blame you for this as well, Derek, is really to split the left more. Couldn't you actually join the Labour Party and change it from within, Tom?
No, I don't think the mechanisms are there for me to do that anymore. Members of my party used to be part of a group called the Militant Tendency that was part of the Labour Party. Many members of that were expelled. You know, we've seen a lot of councillors deselected that don't hold as strongly left-wing views as I do. You know, there's, like I was saying earlier, been a whole process of cleansing and of tightly controlling the Labour Party. For example, the Labour Party conference voted overwhelmingly, if not unanimously actually, to oppose Royal Mail privatisation, and the Labour Party leadership said, no, we will not make that Labour Party policy. So there aren't the mechanisms there for members to democratically make those decisions, and we think therefore that we need now to set up a new alternative, a new party that will stand up for working class people, and that the Trade Unionist and Socialist Coalition is part of that process. And I think, you know, the kind of things that we'll be talking about and we'll be driving is saying, it's austerity. It's not about saving the country money. It's about transferring wealth and power from people like us to the very richest, to big businesses. And, you know, what an alternative we want. Well, first of all, if they've got no money, how are they cutting tax for the rich? Let's put that up to what it was and let's make them pay what they're supposed to, because half of them's dodging it anyway. But things like public ownership as well. I mean, they sold off the Royal Mail for a song for you know, about half what it was worth. When the banks were bailed out, that was done when they were losing money, only for them to be returned to the private sector once the money starts coming back in again. Let's take all those utilities, the railways, the you know, the biggest businesses that dominate our economy, the banking sector, take those into public ownership, not to rescue them, but to run them for our benefit and not the benefit to the wealthy.
I mean, Tom's got a point there, Derek, hasn't he? You know, he's saying basically, you know, the Labour Party's voting against, this is the party as a whole, against the privatisation of Royal Mail, but the party itself doesn't make that policy. I mean, if the party itself is democratic, how on earth are you expecting people to vote for it?
Yeah, I think one of the problems with all the political parties in terms of their party political conferences, which are held each year, they tend to be set pieces for the media rather than what they used to be, which was a place where, you know, the ordinary member of the party could have a vote and set policy. And I think that needs to change so that the ordinary members of the party feel if they go to something like the National Conference, they can actually affect and influence what the national policies are. But I would disagree with Tom in terms that there's a need for a new political party to take over from the Labour Party. I think the Labour Party has started to set a direction in terms of the 2016 election. And I think they are starting to bring people on board. Certainly the Labour Party is now starting to discuss and work with the trade unions so that they can actually go to 2016 as a united voice.
Now, one of the slight embarrassments this week was the vote on the bedroom tax midweek. Ian Duncan Smith answered the Mirror's question about the Medrin taxes, saying when they phoned him, saying he wasn't actually in the Commons at the time, I can't hear you, and then explained with a smile, I'm not there because I'm here. Supporters of the Mirror's Real Britain and Unite the Unions campaign to abolish the bedroom tax protest outside the Houses of Parliament on the day the debate is held on the social tax. Ian Duncan Smith was accused of callous disregard for the victims of his hated bedroom tax yesterday after he dodged a Commons debate, dashing off to Paris. The Eurosceptic Work and Pension Secretary was happy to scuttle across the Channel for once as MPs spoke of the distress and heartache caused by the policy in his own backyard. The problem here is, Tom, that the vote was lost by 25 votes, but it was, I think, either 31, I've seen two different figures, 31 or 45 Labour MPs that didn't turn up to vote. So if they'd have all turned up to vote, they may have won.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what else can you say other than that? I mean, the mark of what someone really stands for is not what they say, it's what they do. And I'm glad to see that the Labour Party have come out and said that they will repeal the bedroom tax, but here was their chance and they didn't take it. And I think, frankly, that is unforgivable. There will be thousands of people across this country that went to bed that night hoping that they would do so safe and secure in their home and free from the fear of eviction. And sadly, that still hangs over them. What more can you say? You know, opposition is deeds and not words, and that's not being followed.
Derek, I mean, there is also a system of pairing at the House of Commons where Labour and Conservative or Liberal Democrat will pair off, and so it means that not every single MP has to be there for every single vote, and that may have played a part in this, but it doesn't look good, does it?
It doesn't look good at all, but I think you're right that if more Labour MPs had actually been there, the other side would have made sure that more of their MPs were there, and I think in the end you'd have got a similar vote. But Tom is right. I mean, the bedroom tax is an absolute joke. It doesn't save any money whatsoever.
Can you explain that? I mean, surely...
Well, less
benefits are being paid, aren't they?
Yeah, well, less benefits are being paid. However, what it means is that those people who are receiving those benefits are then in a situation where they're building up arrears on their council or other properties that then they're looking to evict them. There are no smaller properties for those people to go to, because for a start, the council, we've got over 14,000 people on the waiting list, and the waiting list is only 14,000 because people are on the waiting list for so many years now. Yeah. That people are saying, what's the point of making the effort to go on the waiting list? And we've looked at the cost of actually prosecuting somebody if they didn't pay the additional rent that they have to pay by staying there, and it would cost us thousands. And in fact, the elected mayor George Ferguson said that he was going to start evicting people who hadn't been paying their rent because of the council tax. He's actually had to renege on that because even he can see that it's absolutely ludicrous.
What about other accommodation? I mean, is there other accommodation around, Tom, for people who are finding that their benefits are being cut and they're under threat of eviction?
It's on a decrease all the time. I mean, there's a desperate need in this country, I think, for a house building programme, building council houses that are affordable and secure tenancies, and that also would create work and do a lot towards economic regeneration. And you know, I think that the problems that Derek's highlighted are all very real, that there isn't the smaller properties for people to move into, and so if they do, they'll have to either end up going into the private sector where rents are higher and therefore the benefit bill will be higher, so it won't save any money. Or if they're evicted from their homes, if they're made homeless, then in the first instance they may well have to go into a hostel or into bed and breakfast accommodation, and again the cost of that is considerably dearer than what it is to leave them in their home, which would sometimes be their family home for decades. So yeah, it's a disastrous policy. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever, and you know, it should be scrapped. Obviously.
Well, the reason that it's there is to persuade people to go out to work, Tom.
into what jobs? I mean, there's 2.5 million unemployed people in this country. They're chasing at most 1 million jobs. In Bristol, we've seen the announcement in the last week that 1,000 people are to lose work at the city council. We've had the announcement today that Barclays nationally is laying off 1,700 people. This is the economy that we live in. And even if people are lucky enough to be in work, often it isn't work that pays. The minimum wage is considerably below the living wage. You know, often people are in 0-hour contracts jobs or part-time work when they're looking for full-time, not able to get enough to live on. And I think, you know, when you hear about politicians like the Tories talking about making work pay, well, I agree with that as a principle, but I think the way you should do it is make work pay. Raise the minimum wage and, you know, share out the amount of work that there is, reduce the working week without loss of pay to give jobs to everybody.
Well, that's easy to say, Tom, but most people who are owning a small business, if they have to go up to the higher minimum wage, they have to pay people more, they may have to close down.
Well, yeah, that is possible. And you know, this is part of a problem that we have an economy that is run for the profit of businesses and not for the good of society as a whole. And so it's not just small businesses. Very, very big businesses owned by incredibly wealthy billionaires are able to throw their hands up in the air and plead poverty when the workers ask for so much as a pay rise to match inflation, threaten that they're going to throw them all out on the street and try and drive down wages rather than putting them up. And so, you know, I think public ownership is a key part of that. If things are under democratic public ownership, we decide where those profits go. How much of a share of that goes to workers as wages? How much of it is invested back?
A lot of this public ownership has failed. It's all being privatised, hasn't it, Neil?
Well, I think if you're looking at failures, then privatisation provides exactly that. In the railways, there's three times the public money goes into it now than to what it was British Rail. In the utilities, I mean, we've seen enormous price rises on utilities in the last week or two, people not being able to heat their homes because of them. Well, privatisation's worked out very well for shareholders. If you bought shares in British Gas on the day they were first privatised, you'd have made your money back 18 times over. If you'd have reinvested your dividends, it's something like 40 times over. But the prices have gone up by a not dissimilar amount in that time. So, you know, privatisation works great for the wealthy few, but for the vast majority of people, it is a disaster.
But isn't this part of the problem, Derek, is that the Labour Party, New Labour, as it was under Tony Blair from 1997, was actually doing all this right up till 2010, was privatising left, right and centre?
I'm not quite sure that they were privatising left, right and centre. They were certainly starting to commission out services.
Well, they're even looking at the Royal Mail, weren't they?
One of the big problems is that I actually don't think that, I think that the sort of local government and the government sector and has actually been quite good at delivering services, and privatising them has not proved to be good for people in general.
Can you tell us about how that in Bristol has affected things? Because lots of Bristol services have been privatised. We had home care, for example, last year. Loads of things are now done privately. May Gurney doing our waste collection privately. How has that actually affected? You've seen these changes over the years.
Well, I think what they meant is that we have a lot less control once you've got services contracted out. The benefits in terms of salaries, pensions and everything else for people employed by those organisations are much worse, and we haven't seen a better service. I think the council, when they provided the services, had much more control, and if you'd actually looked at the way services were provided internally and tried to improve that rather than throwing them out to the private sector so you could just sit back and say, oh, you're not doing it well enough, has certainly not been the right approach.
Well, if you go back far enough, it was even Bristol Corporation buses, wasn't it? Anyway, you heard it. Tom's going to have to go now. Is that right, Tom?
I am.
You are right. But we'll play you out, Tom. And we'll come back to Derek in a minute with a recent song by MC Next Gen. We had him a couple of years ago doing something called the Andrew Lansley Rap, which if you haven't heard that, do look it up online. This is one of his latest ones, and it's called F, the Bedroom Tax.
the bedroom tax. F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts. Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax. And all the extra. Ow, the poor are made to bleed for that when there's no need for that. F the bedroom tax. F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts. Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax. It needs to get the axe. But you lower tax for millionaires. Huh? That ish is whack. It's crystal clear, the government are taking a piss right here. Can't believe what I hear through my ears. Over 700 quid a year? Ha! Nah, this ain't funny. The coalition take us for dummies. We can only just fill our tummies. But you just are hungry for our money. Think of all the older mummies in their three bedroom gals. Kids have grown up and now they moved out. Home sweet home, she don't wanna lose that. Yeah? And she made it nice. So many memories that made her life. But wow, now she gotta pay that price. How is that allowed? You can't say that's right. Yo, it makes me go ache. Hard workers on basic wages, they're always out to take our paper. So stuff a Tory who says he's in favour. And where is Labour? Some of you need to get back to the left. Some of you need a slap to the head. Cause some of your hearts are actually dead. Yeah, fair, you're trying to be. You need to make cuts, alright, I see. And so of course it's likely to be the poor people of society, yeah? We always get robbed, so it's our job to open our govs before we get meters put on our bobs and taxed every time we drop a log. F the bedroom tax. F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts, Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax, and all the extra. The poor are made to bleed for that, when there's no need for that. F the bedroom tax, F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts, Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax, it needs to get the axe. But you lower tax for millionaires, huh? That ish is whack. And yo, Ian Duncan Smith, I never swear, but you're a fish. Okay, you must be thick. This ain't gonna get your money back quick. You're just causing problems for the poor. While fat cats reap the rewards, you will just promote benefit fraud. But tax avoidance gets ignored. Well, isn't that ironic? It's the bankers that got us in deep. Stuff you, we don't wanna leave. Doing enough one-bedroom properties. Look, bankers, landlords, shareholders, they're the damn frauds. So I won't stand for Cameron and his greedy. The first gang, I stand for the poor. How we're being treated equal. Your bullies and this tax is evil. And all of my facts are real. 660,000 people. Yeah, we all getting had up. When I read about Cameron, it's all bad stuff. Okay, we had enough, but hey, at least millionaires are getting a huge tax cut. Have you ever thought of the problems? You lot still think you are right? And it's hitting disabled people. That's a violation of human rights. We'll save 500 million. What about 375 billion? Huh? We donated to the bankers to pay off the debts that they've been milking. F the bedroom tax. F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts. Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax. And all the extra. Okay. The poor are made to bleed for that when there's no need for that. F the bedroom tax. F the bedroom tax. Just read the facts. Cameron is a greedy prat. F the bedroom tax. It needs to get the axe. Okay. But you lower tax for millionaires, huh? That is shit's whack.
Well, you might have noticed I had to do quite a lot of edits in there to keep it reasonably clean. Is that your sort of music, Derek?
I don't think it's normally the sort of music I would listen to, but I certainly quite enjoyed that particular track.
Thank you. Now, yeah, the previous song you did was MC Next Gen there, was the Andrew Lansley rap, and he's done several, and you'll find quite a few of them on YouTube, but I would advise you quite a lot of swearing in them. Back to local politics, Derek Pickup. You're now an independent councillor, were until recently a Labour councillor for Hartcliffe. George Ferguson has had a year now as being Bristol's elected mayor. How do you think he's gotten on?
Well, I think one of the problems that George has had, as any elected mayor would have had in Bristol, that really it's a bit like you start the job and you bring a toolkit with you. And actually, you open your toolkit and you find the first thing that's done is that half the tools are missing. Because along comes central government and says, right, well, OK, you're running the city. We said that if Bristol had an elected mayor, we'd help you. And if you remember, Liverpool agreeing to have an elected mayor got, I think it was £120 million of additional central government funding.
Is that a bit of a bribe? Saying to the city,
it was, we don't like
the way you're doing things. If you have one of our nice mayor systems, we'll bribe you with £150 million.
I think that's one way you could put it. It was certainly an encouragement. George thought that when he was elected, he would get treated the same. He went round all the government departments with his begging bowl. And unfortunately, he came back and I'm not even sure if they let him bring the ball back, but he certainly didn't bring any money back. And I think that's, he's been shackled the whole time that he's been the mayor. And now the government has said, when he was elected, the expectation was that over the next 3 years, we would have to lose a maximum of 68 million, which ourselves and the other political parties have worked out. Since he's been in office, that 68 million has gone up to 90 million. And on Monday, we'll find out why, because none of us know at the moment. And how can you actually move a city forward if every time you try and move up a stair, you find that not only is the stair above been sawn through, but the stair you're standing on and the one underneath has been sawn through as well. So I think whatever George has tried to do, he's been fettered the whole time. I think the one good thing that George has done, he's, everybody knows who George is. But I can't really say I can see other successes particularly.
Everyone knows what colour his trousers are. This is a rather irritating side, it's a sort of gimmicky side of it, which I don't like. But anyway, what's happening on Monday? We've got a budget being set.
Budget's not being set. What's happening is, as part of the budget consultation process, the first draft of the budget will be released sometime late on Monday for all the councillors to look at, and the mayor will be releasing it to the media sometime on Monday evening, I understand.
Now, I know last year's budget was largely put together by KPMG. I think it's a guy called Matt Payne, who's a volunteer. Funnily enough, KPMG's headquarters has also just been bought by the City Council, just off outside Templemead. So maybe there was some sort of, maybe he wasn't just a volunteer, maybe there's a little quid pro quo, something going on there, because a little bit of a coincidence that a volunteer should turn up helping Mayor Ferguson, and then a decision should be made by the City Council to buy their headquarters at the same time. But anyway, KPMG involved, who are all sorts of questions about their integrity in many different ways, and also I think it was Simon Cook from the Lib Dems that also helped put together last year's budget. How's this budget process done, and do you know, are KPMG, this advisor Matt Payne or whoever it is, actually helping Mayor Ferguson with this?
To be honest, I'm not sure, because the councillors, the cabinet may have been involved, I understand, to a limited extent, but the rest of us councillors have been kept out of the process so far. Our first engagement in the budget process will start on Monday evening. We've been kept out of that process. As I said, I think the big problem with the whole budget setting process this time around is whoever had been mayor would have been in an impossible position, because it's central government and David Cameron who are the ones who are leading on the agenda.
One of the big issues, of course, is residence parking. This is getting lots of people fuming, particularly in Clifton and Ashley wards and St Paul's. What are your thoughts about how that's gone and how the mayor's handled it?
Well, I think residence parking was something that whoever got in was going to look at. It's gradually rolling out across the city. If you actually look at what the problems that Bristol has, residence parking I don't think goes particularly high on the agenda. I think what most people ought to be focusing on is things like, you know, where are the jobs for people? Where are the jobs particularly for young people?
But does the council have a lot of power to actually make a difference there?
I think the council's like most things. It can pull people together to make things happen, and I think that's important, that the local authority works with other agencies to make things happen. So I think it can have a key role, and it can facilitate a lot of things happening. As we all know, transport is a big issue in Bristol, and it's working to make sure that we have a transport system that will actually assist local people and assist the development of business.
Just going back slightly, just a reminder, KPMG, Parliamentary Commission on Banking Standards, looked into the collapse of HBOS, revealed that KPMG approved the bank's decision in May 2008 to put aside £370 million of provisions for losses at its corporate lending division. In total, actual amount that they needed was £25 billion. So I think they were, well, let's have a look, a rough calculation, about 50 times out of their figures. And these guys are the guys that are helping George prepare proposals for our budget. So, well, let's keep our fingers crossed. Now, Derek, back to your situation. How long do you think you're going to be as an independent? And when is your seat up for re-election?
Well, my seat's up for re-election in May of next year. So I shall stay a very active councillor until May next year. And after May, who knows what I'll do? At the moment, I'm not intending to stand as an independent. I still very much support the Labour Party. And who knows, in the future, I may decide to rejoin. But at the moment, I think having been a very active member for over 20 years, I can afford to step back for a while.
One of the other bits of news this week, foreign police chiefs could take over British forces as the coalition pushes ahead with plans to end historic rules on senior police posts, ministers will announce on Monday. This is James Kirkup, the political editor of the Telegraph. So foreign police chiefs could take over British forces and senior police jobs will be opened up to senior armed forces officers and executives from the private sector, ministers are announcing next week. Graduates could also join the police as inspectors as police recruitment is opened up. Despite resistance from police groups, the coalition will go ahead with plans to end historic rules that mean senior police posts are open only to those who joined the service as constables. Since Robert Peel founded the Metropolitan Police in 1829, the only way to enter the force has been to join as a constable. Those rules have come under pressure in recent years, with critics saying the police need to open up a wider pool of talent to ensure forces have specialist skills, especially in management and IT. I suppose the implication here is that the chief constables don't understand computers. Damien Green, the policing minister, will describe the new rules as ending the closed shop for police recruitment. What's your thought on this one, Derek?
Well, I can't really see how, having, say, a police chief who's been used to running, say, a North American city and coming over here and trying to run a British police force, I think they'd be completely lost. I can't see why they suddenly think that police forces in other countries have suddenly got a better way of training leadership and bringing them over here. I think there are plenty of homegrown individuals who are more than capable of running our police services. And I think it actually does a lot of police officers good to start at the bottom. They don't necessarily have to be a police constable for 10 years before they start going up the ladder. And there's always been a fast-track process within the police force. But I do think it's good that police officers who take senior ranks have an opportunity to experience life as a police officer, you know, from the bottom upwards, so that they take that experience when they go into a senior management role.
Bill Bratton is being earmarked as a possible chief constable to be drafted in under these new laws. He was the head of the Los Angeles Police Department, a very different city to Bristol. It would be interesting to see somebody like that suddenly taking over here out of the blue. I mean, is this going to work?
No, I don't think it is. I see no reason why you shouldn't look at why you shouldn't take individuals who've been successful in a different environment, bring them over here and ask for their comments on the British system in the light of their experience abroad and looking at their comments. I certainly wouldn't put them in charge of a British police force. And anybody who thinks that a British city is similar to Los Angeles, it isn't. And I think he will be a duck out of water.
The Police Federation were on here last week. They're also against it. Why do you think they're doing this?
I have no idea. They seem to have some very bizarre ideas about how we can run things better. And they may feel that the Americans have the monopoly on good ideas. Most of us don't feel the Americans have got the monopoly of good ideas. And in fact, a lot of people enjoy going to places like North America for a holiday. And then you say, would you live there? And they said, oh, God, definitely not.
Well, I mean, the idea of guns on the streets, it can be pretty different. I mean, I would have thought that this is a very, very different environment that Bill Bratton is running to, say, for example, rural Somerset, which Haven and Somerset would be. Although, of course, he's being looked at as a possible person to take over the Met in London. I mean, we've also seen the new Serious Crime Agency, which is earmarked and sort of subtitled Britain's FBI, actually arresting people in Britain who have actually not committed any offence in Britain, although there are warrants out for them in the United States. So it's almost as if there is a kind of extension of US law to the wider world, to other parts of Europe. And maybe this is part of that.
I have no idea what the Conservative government are trying to do, and I certainly don't support them. I think, as I said before, that we have plenty of very capable police officers who can lead our police forces. I see no reason why we shouldn't ask for, why we shouldn't look at experiences around the world to try and help us understand how you can make improvements. I don't think that police officers in other countries coming over here would work. I think they would be ducked out of water. And I don't think it would make life any better. I think one of the key pillars of the British police system is that you have a police service that's respected by individuals, not a police service where people listen to a police officer because they produce a gun that's bigger than the gun that the criminal happens to have. I think it's about sort of mutual respect that people have for the police force, and I hope that's the sort of ethos that we continue to have in this country.
Well, staying with policing, and we're here today, yesterday, students in London are outraged as the University of London Union President Michael Chesham is arrested in what they call an attack on the right to protest. A student leader in London is arrested in a move that's been branded a clear attack on the right to protest. Michael Chesham, president of ULU, Student Union, was arrested around lunchtime yesterday in connection with a demonstration he'd organised the day before in central London against the planned closure of the University of London Union. Witnesses claim Mr Chesham was intercepted by several police officers outside the ULU building in Bloomsbury as he made his way back from a meeting with the University of London management. He was taken to Holborn Police Station. ULU said this is a clear attack on the right to protest. It's a transparent and shameful attempt to intimidate the students from demonstrating against the actions of the university management. Dan Cooper, Vice President, told The Independent, who hadn't been arrested, told The Independent that he believes Mr Chesham was arrested on the grounds that ULU failed to properly notify police of yesterday's demonstration. We think this is a disgraceful act of intimidation. Go on the University of London to intervene and help get Michael released. What are your thoughts about this? It does sound as if the police are getting a bit heavy-handed and almost becoming a political police, because clearly what they're doing here is protesting against government's policies. I mean, obviously, they've trickled down through the university in this case, but I mean, this sounds like a very political arrest. The leader of the student union in London.
I mean, I think this is outrageous. I mean, I was fortunate enough to be a student in the 1970s, and in fact, in the 70s, students protested all the time. We protested the fact that the grants that we actually got to go to university weren't big enough, and we wanted bigger grants. Nowadays, there are no grants for students. We protested about things like apartheid in South Africa.
I'm going to have to stop you there, Derek, because we've got coming up to the Murdoch News at 6 o'clock. Afterwards, we hear from a Tamil in London about the Commonwealth Heads of Government Conference in Sri Lanka today.
Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 6, David Cameron.